Harry Potter and the Kaiju Apocalypse. Written by Opal Song as part of Pod Together 2017 and read by Frecklebomb Fic. That Hermione and Luna could agree that the end of the world was coming was probably on its own a symbol of the apocalypse. Hermione had only been 7 or 8 years old when she'd first seen Kaiju on screen, watching the huge mecha battle it out with them, tearing up whole cities along the coast, watching millions of people's homes be destroyed. She knew then that she had to learn to take them apart. But she wasn't sure which of them that meant. Luna knew that there were rumours about her. That she'd come into contact with Kaiju Blue at a young age. That it had changed her somehow. People weren't saying that she could predict the future. But they weren't not saying that either. One single image had become a rallying point for the whole human race. A small child, skinny, young-looking for 7 years old, reaching out to touch a kaiju with his hand. The buildings around him decimated, backlit in stark contrast to the kaiju in front of him. The child himself, Harry Potter, carried a scar on his face from the encounter, and it and he became a fixture in the San Francisco Shatterdome. His mother, Lily, after so nearly losing her child, knew then that she had to get involved in a meaningful, hands-on way in the efforts to fight the kaiju. She had no single brilliant idea to contribute, but she found people who were already in on the effort and started pitching in. Her partner James and his friends came along too, to provide care for Harry and support Lily in her efforts, they said. She ended up seeing almost as much of his best friend Sirius as she did of him. She felt good knowing James and Harry had someone else there to support them when she was pulling long shifts in the workshops. By the time James and Sirius had qualified to pilot a full Jaeger together, unsimulated, they were up to the Mark II model. Ron grew up in a Shatterdome. His mum had been working in one as long as he could remember, and his dad had always been involved in coastal protection politics. Fred and George were in training a few years earlier than was strictly permitted, and were on track to be some of the best Jaeger pilots of their age. And Ginny had been fixing Jaeger since she could sneak into one. They knew something was coming. They just had to be ready for it. Harry grew up in the Shatterdomes. General Dumbledore told him that the photo shoots of him playing with his dad and Sirius and living his life inspired people and gave them hope. But he couldn't shake the feeling that he wanted to do something real. He was surrounded by engineers, after all. Lily had been working on the Kaiju Mark III, the first ever. And on its first test run, which she would of course not let anybody else do, she drifted with James. And after that, she wouldn't ever go back. General Dumbledore pleaded with her, citing her engineering expertise and years of service, but that was it for her. She was a pilot. Fred and George loved Jaeger. They were all set to head into robotics before. They worked their way up from the janitorial level, sweeping floors and doing everything they could to help, just to be able to be in the same room as the engineers. They did once have a conversation with Lily about the Mark IVs, which may have been the best thing that ever happened to them. Ginny had her first ever kaiju encounter while on a duty shift. She was 11. She had crawled deep inside a Jaeger, somewhere nobody else could reach, but a recurrent trouble spot. When she saw two eyes reflect the light of her head torch back at her. She swung her wrench at it instinctively, but it wrapped itself around her arms. She was a youngest child by nature, and her first instinct was to hit repeatedly until whatever it was let go, and it served her well. If Molly had had her way, she would never have been allowed back into the engineering lab ever again. Ginny managed to hold her ground, though, and was back on shift the next day. Luna emerged from her lab, pale, half-starved, and raving. She said the alien homeworld was flammable, and all they needed was a nuke to ignite it. Hermione checked her work, said it was sound, but there was no way anyone would agree to give them one. Their defunct, underfunded outpost didn't have the clout to get one, or the resources to build one. Or so they thought. When Fred and George heard the discussion, they exchanged a look, and then beckoned everyone towards their own personal workshop. It seems like their homemade Jaeger was going to get some use after all. The official record of how Luna came to start working at the Jaeger program has been lost to a kaiju attack. There are those who would use that information to support their theory that all kaiju are the product of a secret government research facility deep in the ocean, to keep the population afraid and under control. As soon as James and Lily started piloting together, Sirius went to Remus and begged him to say they could pilot together. There is one telling of it that says he literally interrupted a training session to ask, beg, and, well, it worked. They were often partnered with James and Lily, an effective battle combination. Harry was 12 when he lost both his parents. Thankfully, humanity was in a different place than when he had suddenly become an icon for the survival of the seaboard. There was less demand for him at photo opportunities and speeches, and he was able to turn into the safety of the friends who had become more like family. What he wanted more than anything, now that it seemed possible, was to enter the training program with his friend Ron. But General Dumbledore and Molly both forbade it. They were both too young, they said, and Harry in particular would never be allowed to pilot. By the time Ron had graduated it, the Jaeger program was dying. Fewer and fewer resources and graduates every year. He missed Harry by his side, who all too often, between his own schedule and whatever appearances Harry had booked in, he saw on the TV screen more than in person. He thought maybe he might drift with one of the other boys, but as soon as they got into the ring, Dean and Seamus became Dean and Seamus. He did find a drift partner, though, in Lavender, and the two of them were even eventually assigned their own Jaeger. They worked well together, until they actually went out. It was only because one of them thought quickly, it was impossible to tell who in the moment, that they got to their escape pods in time. It was the last time they ever went out. Hermione tested out of high school the moment she could. And university, too. She could have done anything she wanted. The theory was where her heart lay, though. Research. She went for mathematics and quantum physics. What she really wanted was to get to the bottom of where the Kaiju were coming from. She just wanted to understand what was happening down there. Where were they coming from? Why were they coming here? She caught flak for it, but she didn't really care. She just wanted to figure it out. Fred and George had been asked to fight in a Jaeger, but they refused. They drifted together as part of their research, and after drifting together, they had started dreaming together. Dreaming of bright, bright green light and the most intense pain, of death and destruction. And they refused. They refused, and they knew they would continue to refuse until there was no other option but the end of the world. Luna had a somewhat unsettling habit of calling the Kaiju misunderstood, or just one of life's little mysteries. But then she would go on to talk about the little people who helped her in her lab, or Faye in general, and people would stop listening altogether. It was never quite possible to tell whether Luna was trolling or not. By the time Harry was a teenager, Jaeger programs were almost completely defunded. He was used to giving speeches to entire shatterdomes. He refused to endorse the Wall program, though, which earned him huge amounts of public criticism. He was accused of trying to keep himself relevant, and a relic of a past era. He settled into the same shatterdome as his uncles Sirius and Remus, until Sirius's ill-advised accident caused them both to move inland so he could recuperate. Harry stayed in the Shatterdomes because they were what he knew, and because maybe if he stayed around long enough, they'd let him help in the way he really wanted. After all new Jaeger production was defunded, the twins started working by night. Ginny caught them early on, breaking into a closed-off workshop to salvage parts, and she was a better mechanic than either of them put together, so they let her in on it. They built, as the wall went up along the seaboard, brick by brick. Slowly, their bootleg Jaeger took shape. Before the accident, Sirius and Remus piloted one of the best Jaegers in the fleet. In any fleet. But then Sirius had to go and fall off a skateboard and fracture his spine. Sirius was forced to retire. He was never getting back into a Jaeger again. The twins' fleet, slightly grown since they built their first prototype, was ready. They were finally going to get to pilot their baby. General Dumbledore and Lupin had both come out of retirement and were going to pilot the sole remaining Japanese Jaeger. But when the twins stepped up to open the first ever Newmark Jaeger, their Jaeger, they found it was already occupied. Harry was sitting in it, ready for battle. And next to him, a girl. Chrome. The only pilot to ever have survived her partner dying whilst in drift. She said she could still hear him inside her head. They said they were drift compatible. They said they could do it. Just then somebody shouted that General Dumbledore was having a heart attack. And, well, the breach was opening. They needed all the pilots they could get. Fred and George ran over to the other Jaeger. It looked like they were going to pilot a mecha into battle after all. Just not the one they expected to. Luna pulled off the drift helmet. She had seen an endless network. She understood. She understood them in ways even they didn't understand themselves. And she knew now how to destroy them. The buzzer sounds, and he watches the mecha leave the hangar. He was hesitant when he first met his brothers and sisters, slow to see their gods. But now he is the most pious among them, the most fervent believer. Now is his chance to prove his worth and his devotion. The god killer is lifted from its hangar by helicopters, and hangs there from cables like a convict from the gallows, as it's flown out to its drop point. On the giant screen, he can see the ripples, the vast wake of the god cresting the ocean's surface. He's never seen one so big this close, and has to fight tears back at the grace with which it moves, the power in its enormous flanks. The god killer is upon it in moments, swinging its blade down and around at its momentarily exposed neck. He holds his breath, but the god twists and slithers away. Had it not worked, he thinks. He waits. The god killer wheels around, repositions, and they clash again and again. The heathens around him cheer. Any moment now, he thinks. Then, all his work, his practice and prayer is fruitful. The weapon of the unbelievers falters. Its right knee buckles, the couplings failing under strain as he intended. And it stumbles. The god, divine in its wisdom and awesome in its strength, seizes the chance to wreck it, tearing through it like so much wet tissue paper. He has filled his divine duty. Sacrificed a god killer. Silence falls around him as the huge shattered dome screen cuts away from the wreckage. Are you okay, Peter? Someone asks him, a gentle hand on his shoulder. He raises his head, smiling with too many teeth. He had done it. The twins' original prototype was a one-way trip. A universally, but silently acknowledged fact. That they were now in a different Jaeger meant that the battle strategy had to be changed on the fly. They were now one of the decoys. The three Jaeger were met by three kaiju in open water. Two merely huge, and one colossal. Fred and George extended their sword, and signal to the others to get into position. They needed to take out the biggest one to give Harry and Chrome a chance at their mission. Before they had a chance to move, the twins were cut off from the others by the first snake-like kaiju. Risking a glance over their shoulder, they saw that the smallest Jaeger, their other decoy, was occupied too. But the Goliath was nowhere to be seen. Harry and Chrome plummeted, their jury-rigged suit creaking under the combined strain of water pressure and the enormous kaiju wrapped around its back. They hit the ocean floor softly, and its claws scrabbled around in the dust they kicked up, as they dragged it further and further towards the unmistakable glow of the breach. Just as Luna had described it. All they really had to do was get there. Everyone saw the plume of water erupt on the shattered dome screens, felt the aftershocks come up from the foundations. Fewer and fewer were left to scan the water's surface once it had stilled for signs of their pilots. Three escape pods bobbed to the surface at once, into empty ocean. Fred tore open his exit hatch and swam over to the others. Both pilots from their third Jaeger were safe, and they sent up their rescue flares. But there was no sign of George. Then, there was a shout in the distance, and a single arm waving out of a fourth pod, the hatch dented shut. They levered it open as soon as they reached it to see blood. George, covered in more blood than should be possible for him to still be smiling like that. The last two escape pods appeared after the medical and press helicopters had arrived, after George's severed ear had been seen to, and after hope of finding the two last pilots had almost gone. But what it meant is that everyone saw them climb out, exhausted and relieved. Every camera caught the grief and triumph on their faces, for everything they'd both lost to get here. Parents, drift partners, and friends. Every microphone recorded the first words that Harry spoke, standing on his escape pod and facing the fleet of observers. The apocalypse is cancelled. That was Harry Potter and the Kaiju Apocalypse, written by Opal Song as part of Pod Together 2017, and read by Frecklebomb Fic. And now for some reader free talk. This was billed as an experimental writing project based on memory when I signed up to it, which was very exciting, and I didn't know anything about the fandom or content when I signed up. You might have read this when you downloaded the podfic. You may have read the full script, you may have read the transcript for this or others, you may have listened to other versions of this already. But the summary is, I received this in a series of five transmissions, which I was allowed to read once, and then had to recreate from memory. Now, the way I personally did this was, I read it once, and then after I read it, I would usually digest it for a couple of hours and then make notes, usually about the sequence of events, the sequence of scenes, and a list of keywords, phrases that stuck out to me, notes on things like which tense to use, because I was paranoid about switching tenses, which I may have done, things like which characters cropped up, any names to use, although I know I've skipped names because that's a weak point in my memory that I'm aware of, and I thought it would be better to not try and do that than do it badly. Something that changed throughout the transmissions is that I started filling in more information, not from memory. So I started adding detail, particularly because the first four transmissions were made up from a larger number of short scenes, and the final transmission was fewer scenes, but very long and quite detail heavy. And I just couldn't remember that much. I reflected on it and tried to absorb it, and I just couldn't remember it. So instead what I did was I took my notebook out and rewrote the scenes, essentially. I tried to keep the chronology of how I remembered the scenes to be, kind of, but I just added in more detail. So I feel like the climactic scene of the whole work is much more detail-heavy than the build-up. But I think that's okay. I haven't edited it yet, so I haven't actually listened back to anything I've done while I'm telling you this. So I hope it sounds okay. But I hope you enjoyed listening. I hope you go and listen to other Podficker's versions. I myself am going to download all of them and listen to all of them because I am so excited about how this is going to turn out, and to listen to how other people have interpreted this writing, and to listen to Opal Song's cleaned up version of the whole thing, because I remember being incredibly excited when I got every single transmission. Intimidated about how I was going to remember all of it and record it, but incredibly excited to see where the story was going to go. So thank you for listening. Thank you for getting to the end of this free talk, which is longer than I thought it was going to be, but I'm really excited about this project. And I hope you have a lovely day. No, that's horrendous. Why would you say that? The official record of how Luna came to start working at the Kaiju program. No, Jaeger program. Fuck. Words! By the time Ron graduated the training program... By the time Ron had graduated it, the Kaiju... Oh, fucking... How do I say all this? Fuck. No. With some despising? And some despising? Fuck. This is so hard. Words. I don't have to write like this normally. Oh my god. I just read things off the page. I don't have to do this. Oh my god. Okay. The only pilot to ever to... Fucking... Diction. Just as Luna had described it. Oh, for fuck's sake. Oh, I have three more pages to read. I'm gonna cry.
Harry Potter and the Kaiju Apocalypse, read by Originally. People whisper about the xenobiologist in Lab 4. Her name is Luna, so she says. If that's her real name, no one knows. And they say she was covered in Kaiju blue as a child. They say it made her a little bit psychic. She knows the apocalypse is coming. They say she tried to drift with a Kaiju, came out of it bug-eyed and bleached. Raving, incomprehensible. She says they need a nuke. No one asks her how she knows. There was another child in San Francisco who became the symbol of resistance, of hope. While those around him perished, he survived, with nothing but a distinctive scar on his forehead. There's a picture, just the one. Him. Touching the nose of a Kaiju. It's enough. His mother is a Jaeger engineer. His father, a pilot. This is all he knows. Shatterdomes are where Harry spent his childhood. Erised Phoenix. That's what Lily calls the Mark III. She drifts with James once, and then no one can pull them apart. He was 12 when they died. It was hard to be a symbol of hope when consumed with thoughts of revenge. But General Dumbledore wanted him to stay back to do interviews on TV and stay away from Jaeger. They won't let him partner with Ron, so Ron finds a new partner, and it all goes horribly wrong. Hermione grew up watching the mechs and the Kaiju on TV, and she wanted to know all about them. As she grew older, she had a singular focus. Maths, quantum physics, all to let her do the research she needs to do. She graduates early, could have a pick of master's courses, but she knows where she needs to be. When Harry was 14, he was given speeches to inspire Shadow Domes. By the time he was 17, the Shadow Domes were closing down. The Jaegers were all silent, dismantled, and there was no one left to fly them. Fred and George Weasley had drifted once, together, the most compatible that anyone had ever seen. And then they had refused to ever pilot a Jaeger. They didn't tell anyone about the dreams, the flashes of green light, the pain of cuts, the darkness, the separation. But then there's a breach, and they have to do something. They have a Jaeger, a secret project, cobbled together from cannibalized parts of other Jaegers. Erised Phoenix, Horny Grim, Blade Dancer, a dozen others. They call it Wizard Wheezy. It barely looks like it could survive a hit from a kaiju, but they have to try. When Luna put on the drift helmet, she saw orange and blue neurons, a vast network, and she knew they would not stop until they were destroyed. The apocalypse began. Kaiju met Jaeger, and Wizard Wheezy went down, down into the depths, through the breach, a suicide mission that was their only hope of salvation. The sea was silent. This was what the nightmares had foretold, thought George as he surfaced, the side of his head awash with blood. But no, finally, there was Fred, his escape pod servicing. "We've cancelled the apocalypse," he said, his voice full of laughter. The end.
Testing, 1, 2... Testing, 1, 2... Oh, for Christ... Miney, please, why are we trying to record now? We just saved the world. There's no need to... I know this is the best setup we have. That isn't the point. We could do this later, in better conditions. I'm not going to bloody forget what... Oh, it's on? Finally decided to work. Yes, I'm doing it. Okay. This is Harry James Potter, co-pilot of Swooping Mist. The date is... The day after we collapsed the breach, year 2033. Anyway, it's a beautiful cloudy day, and I'm supposed to tell you, whoever you are, how I saved the world. No joke. Even if I wasn't really the only one who did it. I know there's a certain amount of leeway granted to me because I'm the one the media knows, as if all Jaeger pilots weren't celebrities by themselves. But, as I've said, I'm the one with credit. I'm the one who has to do it for the record. Thanks, Hermione! I don't know where to begin. This is the story that shaped me. Shaped everyone I know. It might seem weird to future generations, but I don't know a single person who can't tell you at least the outline of what I'm about to say. does make a guy feel redundant. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is, before I talk about stuff everyone already knows about, I just want everyone listening, everyone who's lived through this, to know that this is our story. Not just mine. It belongs to everyone who survived. And I suppose it starts in San Francisco. The city is a lot smaller than it used to be, and I've seen photos. After the kaiju attacked, yeah,
It was leveled. I'm told 40% of the infrastructure was totaled after it crashed through, and the exact number of casualties are tough to look at. I was at San Francisco when that all went down. Or, well, I was, but I don't remember it. Does anyone remember what was going on when they were 15 months? I was tiny. All I really know about the time is what other people have told me, and the photographs. Or should I say, the photograph? I'm sure you know the one. Me, in a blanket, nearly untouched with San Francisco in ruins in the background. Some journalist took it, and then died, of kaiju blue. Didn't even stick I'm still not sure whether to be glad or not that I never got to talk to them. Without that photo, I doubt I'd be nearly as well known today. Mom said it was on TV for ages after that. All I know is that whenever I went to interviews back then, that was always the photo they pulled up. Me in San Francisco. I suppose it was symbolic or something. Anyway, after that, despite what most people think, Jaegers weren't really a thing. My mom, Lily J. Potter. Yes, that Lily. My whole family was famous. Already had the idea floating around, but they all thought it'd be a one-time thing, you know? That they'd defeated it, and that was the end of the kaiju. I can't imagine a world without kaiju, but Da says the second one was just as big of a shock as the first. Mom started campaigning pretty soon after that, for funds, for backing, for recognition that nukes just weren't going to cut it. There's still parts of California that you can't visit because of that first blast. And don't even mention Sydney. My mom used to rant forever about the idiocy behind that choice. It won her the funding, though. Half the city destroyed, the whole thing nearly unlivable due to radiation. It certainly made the international community see that nukes weren't sustainable long-term. And kaiju were long-term. I don't know what they were doing before, but Sydney lit a fire under their collective arse. Mom was already talking to a lot of governmental aides who had been telling her, politely of course, to go away and stop asking to see their leaders. Once she managed to meet and convince the United Nations, she and Caitlin Lightcap managed to collaborate and create Jaegers as they're known today. Caitlin was one of the first pilots and survived to see Mark IV start production. I knew her best as Auntie Kate, though. She stopped by a lot when I was young. She's one of the reasons that... We made sure to kill the kaiju that got Brawler Yukon. Anyway, after the Jaeger program started getting big enough to protect the Pacific Ocean, the United Nations threw their support behind it and established the PPDC, the Pan-Pacific Defense Corp. And then those were the glory days of the program. The Academy was established a couple years in and the world just adapted. I grew up running the six-ring circus that was the public eye, and I tried really hard to be overshadowed by Mom and Da, who had begun piloting Stagger Delta by then. Uncle Sirius and Uncle Remus had begun piloting Horny Grim by then, too, after the mess in Korea. That was the way of things for a long time. Over a decade of peace from 2016 to approximately 2029. Someone else could give you a more accurate date, but the kaiju... When the kaiju attacks became significantly more often, when my... Public support declined around that time. Kaiju started learning from the Jaegers and started to win. Stag fell in 2030. Grimm, 31. Around 28, 29-ish, I began to talk to the pilots in the Shadow Domes around the world. I even got to talk to Cherno Alpha before they were reassigned to Hong Kong, and tried to raise support for the Jaeger program. It never used to be a problem until they started losing. Yeah, that went poorly. The United Nations switched from funding the PPDC to the WAL program in 2030, right around mid-November. I remember Hermione Granger, one of my best friends, was hopping mad about it. Both of us had met at a Jaeger fundraiser, and she already had a doctorate and a half to her name at 15 back then. We were both so young. Nothing we did seemed to work. No amount of campaigning, coaxing, or arguments about the WAL structure seemed to reach the UN. I'd met Ron, Weasley, the same year I met Hermione, and by the time they'd cut funding, he'd only been a pilot for a year. He tried to appeal to them too, but no one was able to convince them. Sydney had to happen again for them to see sense. 2033, Mutavor broke through the WAL, and only Blade Dancer, who had just been decommissioned, was able to take it out. I don't know if you've seen Victor and Yuri together, but they're one scary pair in a pond. Scary for the kaiju, that is. Blade Dancer ripped up Mutavor with a minimum of casualties. They do a hell of a lot better than some bloody WAL. I guess that must have proven to the UN that the program was worth something. Dumbledore managed to gather everyone up in Hong Kong Shadow Dome and scraped up enough funding to finish some old Jaeger programs. That's actually what Swooping Mist was at first. Barely finished in time, it got its first run with Chrome Dokuro and Mukuro Rokudo for the first test runs, until Mukuro broke his arm in the double event. Fred and George, Weasley, they're Ron's brothers, rescued the Jaegers from the Shadow Dome, but it was too late for Mukuro's arm and Cherno Alpha. Skyfire was part of the double event too, working with Swooping Mist and Wheezing Wizard to bring down Leatherback and Otachi. Tsunayoshi Sawada and Gokudera Hayato are quite the pair. I think they actually lit their hands on fire to overcome Leatherback's acid. No one can say that's not effective. Tsuna denies it was his idea, but we all know Gokudera wasn't the one with accelerants. He's the one with explosives. Anyway, once everyone who supported the Jaeger program, which at this point was down to about 3 working Jaegers with 2 in progress. The working ones were Cherno Alpha, of course, Skyfire, and Blade Dancer. Wizard and Mist were still undergoing repairs, or, in Wizard's case, actually being built. Fred and George, the pilots of Wheezing Wizard, are the only ones I know of who would actually be able to design and build a Jaeger without PPDC funding. I suppose their family helps, them being Fred and George Weasley. From what they've told me, they had the idea for Wizard for ages, even before the pilots started losing. After that, though, they started ramping up production. I know there's a lot of scraps used in its design, parts of Gypsy Danger, Stagger Delta, Horny Grim. I think they even got some of Cherno Alpha to finish repairs after the double event. And of course, none of that would be possible without their sister, Ginny. Ginnerva Weasley. The best mechanic and Jaeger specialist I know. She's one of the hardest working people I know. Fred and George designed Wizard, but Ginny... Ginny built her. Her mom and dad were part of the PPDC until they had to start layoffs, and Dumbledore hired them again, right after Sydney happened a second time. So she and her brothers grew up around Jaegers their entire life. They have some wild stories. Just asked about, Ginny and the kaiju baby. Anyway, Ron, who I mentioned before, he and Neville used to pilot Cannon Army, before they got taken out by a Category 4 with an armor mutation. They both survived, but neither of them, they're not piloting anymore. And not just because they don't have a Jaeger. The point is, Ron's a pilot. Charlie works with Luna in Kaiju Behavioral Analysis. Bill and Fleur used to pilot Harpy Curse before Bill lost his arm. Percy lobbies for Jaeger funding. The twins pilot Wizard. Ginny helped build it. It's in their blood. So, it surprises no one when Ginny was hanging around Jaeger hangars. When she was 5, when she was 10, her entire life. She told me once about meeting my mom. She tagged along to a charity benefit with Bill when he was still piloting, and Mom happened to be speaking about the breakthrough they'd made with Mark III tech. Anyway, Ginny, she was only 11 at the time, walks up to her and starts asking questions about the hydraulics in the arm systems. And one thing led to another, and Mom got carried away talking to Ginny, who had a better understanding of the practical parts of Jaeger design than most people there. I think the twins heard of that, and it was her brilliance with Jaegers that they really had to count on. And that event was where her brilliance with Jaegers really started to show, and Miss Weasley finally took her seriously about that apprenticeship with the head mechanic. If you can keep up with my mom in her own field, you're clearly doing something right. Of course, I didn't really meet her until Hong Kong, but she was well established as queen of the shop by then. Ron, on the other hand, I met him a lot earlier. We'd both been trying to apply for the academy at the same time. I'd snuck away from Padfoot, who had been watching me, and went to the nearest recruitment center to try and apply. It seems stupid now, but back then I was furious that they weren't allowing me to help and fight. I was still in the media, dragged out every time a new kaiju hit, and that was the only time I mattered. I was 15 then, and everyone was used to kaiju. They understand they'd be protected and just got on with their lives. I doubt more than 1 in 10 really thought about kaiju every day like I did. When I met him at the station, though, man... Someone else who was just like me. Of course, he got into the academy, and I got dragged off to another press meeting. We kept in touch, though. He would send me letters about what they were training in, and I'd send him pictures from all the charity events I went to. I'm pretty sure I got the better end of that bargain. It was at one of those charity events, though, I met Hermione. She had already been working on her second doctorate and wowing all these people near her with her math-based models of the breach. We were the only kids that young at the event, 15, and everyone seemed to think that that would make us get along. Lucky for their ideas, we did, and she told me about her thoughts on kaiju attack frequency for several hours. It's fascinating stuff if you can understand it. I can't. But the way she talked about it, like she thought kaiju attack patterns were something to be pored over. Well, I thought, that's just like me. We kept in touch, too. Through the whole wall funding disaster, the attack rates increasing, just like she had predicted, and public opinion turning... She got a job with the PPDC Science Division after she got her second PhD in numerical analysis. They funded her research into predicting when the next kaiju would arrive. She and Luna were the last of the PPDC scientists in Hong Kong. They had to share a lab. I hear it was rough. Hermione would come banging on my door at 11 and rant to me about what Luna was saying. Don't tell her, but I think she liked trying to figure it out. The important thing about them working together, though, is they started to share theories. And what they agreed on was that the kaiju were coming sooner, more often. Hermione predicted the double event. Luna predicted what type of kaiju would be in it. We still don't know a lot about kaiju or maid, though the fact that they are is something Luna insists on. Luna, well, about her, she had a bad case of kaiju blue when she was younger. It left its mark. She's right, though. Dead on about their behavior and abilities, so much so that it's uncanny. Her and Ginny bonded over that, I think. No one bothered to ask, not when they were giggling over kaiju remains in the lab. I'm happy, but never ask me to be the one that interrupts them. Yeah, even when everything was falling down, we were all still there. And that was that. Nothing much changed in the Hong Kong Shatter Dome until the double event occurred. Until Luna and Hermione's predictions came true. And that was when the real damage started. We lost Cherno Alpha, and Weezing Wizard got seriously broken up. Blade Dancer made it out safely, since they were only deployed near the end of the fight, but Swooping Mist was nearly off as bad off as Wizard, and Mukuro's arm was shattered. Skyfire had serious burns down its arm from the setting self on fire incident, and there were a lot of questions from the public. I got to handle those, being someone the crowd knew, but there's no good way to tell someone, I'm sorry your husband died, but we can't do anything about it. After Dancer took out Itachi, Luna was near enough to find its baby, which was still alive for some reason, though it was dying. She and Hermione drifted with it. They still won't talk to me about how or why. Though, if Hermione's getting everything on record, I'm pretty sure we'll all know soon. Right after the double event, that's where things got serious, because Luna and Hermione were drifting with that thing for hours. Dumbledore sprung his plan when they were unavailable. Not around to tell them it was kind of stupid. Really stupid. You see, Dumbledore had this idea that based on Hermione's math-based models of the breach, if something interrupted it, the whole thing would collapse. This is actually really well-proven theory. Or so I'm told. It's about as much of a sure thing as you can get in theoretical mathematics dealing with interdimensional portals. So, the obvious solution was to send enough Jaegers to storm the breach and blow it up, right? And I'm sure you know, it's been done before. Well, the thing about this time is that we were the last hope. The double event made that clear. So it was decided to gamble it all. One final push against the breach. All or nothing. They loaded Wizard down with a nuke and some hasty repairs and sent her off with Blade Dancer, Skyfire, though Sky was missing most of her hand functions, and Swooping Mist. Me and Chrome, that is. Yeah, we're drift compatible. The thing is, we knew we'd be drift compatible. It's just something you know. When you can make it work, it just clicks. Of course, that's the hard part, actually making it work. But I've been around enough pilots to know. If you're drift compatible, you don't need the Quoon Room or fancy machines measuring your sync rates. You just are. So it's no surprise we got in Mist and then lit her up. What is surprising is we got her out of the hangar. It's thanks to Molly Weasley and Neville Longbottom that we did. I'd never been more grateful that they went into communication tech as that moment. So there we were. 4 Jaegers, 8 people, heading down hundreds of feet below the water, intent on saving the world. And that's when Hermione called. Well, not literally. Neville tells me she and Luna called him, and demanded to be patched through to our comms, saying that there was something important they needed to say. Neville, who knew Hermione, patched them through. What we got was frantic babbling in our ears, half a mile out from the breach. They told us it wasn't going to work. Not without kaiju biological material, that is. And so, we formed a plan. Skyfire would lure the kaiju out. There was predicted to be another event soon. We had been planning on detonating before that happened, but we could use it to our advantage. Blade Dancer would take the kaiju down, Wizard would take the bomb into the breach, and we'd take the kaiju in right before them, once Dancer finished with it. It was a solid plan. The only problem? Wizard's left arm and leg were destroyed in the battle. Blade Dancer took out Scunner, Skyfire and Wheezing Wizard had to tag team Raiju, but me and Chrome weren't a match for Slattern, the first Category 5 ever. And the last. Wizard had to step in and take it down. Mist would have been mincemeat if she didn't, but that didn't make getting the nuke, which was strapped onto Wizard's back, any easier. What we did is me and Chrome detached it from their back and started trying to drag both it and Slattern's carcass into the breach. And then Blade Dancer stepped up. Skyfire would have too. We could see them down there trying to make her hands work, but Blade Dancer was the only one other than us with both working hands and legs. So we got to the breach. Blade Dancer threw Slattern over the rim. Chrome and I took a deep breath and jumped in after. I can't describe the breach. Everything is snapshotted and fragmented, too blurry and too close. The best I can say is that it rippled. Space was distorted down there, and we lost touch of why we even had a bomb in the first place. I'm not sure what saved us, be it one side of the ponds or swooping mist herself. All I can say is after those endless minutes in blue light, the nuke's countdown was activated. We tried to swim out, but, well, it's impossible to swim upwards in a Jaeger. It's made of metal. It just doesn't work. So we activated our escape pods. Chrome first, then me, and got the bloody hell out of there. The last thing I can recall before waking up on the surface is the brilliant white of an explosion and alien faces turned to it, as if to the sun. And then I woke up, and we had won. This has been Harry Potter and the Kaiju Apocalypse, read and written by Weirenth, aka Robin Fire. The original text was written by Opalsong. This podfic is part of Pod Together, a challenge where writers and readers collab on a fic designed for podficking, and created as part of the Pensieve Project. The Pensieve Project is a project in which podfickers were given a single read of the base text, in this case, 5 snippets of a Harry Potter Pacific Rim fusion, and asked to record based on their memories. No rereads of the original material were allowed. I had a lot of fun with this idea, and I hope you had just as much fun listening to the result. Special thanks to the Pod Together mods for making such a wonderful event possible, Opalsong for enthusiasm and the wonderful original text. Please do leave a comment. The work is available on Archive of Our Own, under the Pod Together collection. Thank you for listening.
just one history of the apocalypse. Everyone talks about Harry. There's the picture he's famous for, of him standing there in the rubble, face to face with a giant kaiju, reaching out just slightly to touch it on the nose and then it falls over. No one knows how it happened. No one knows how he survived with just that scar on his forehead, when everyone around him, his aunt, his cousin, the photographer, all died too. No one knows, but still they talk. Harry's mother was at the forefront of Jaeger engineering. Lily didn't start it or invent it or figure out drift technology in the first place, but she found out where it was going and got in there so she could start at the beginning and help everyone out. James came with her, James and all his friends. They said it so she wouldn't be lonely, but Lily thinks it's because they wouldn't know what to do with themselves if she weren't around. James and Sirius were too late to be Mark 1 pilots, which Lily thinks was probably a good thing in retrospect, but they were Mark 2 pilots as soon as the Mark 2s were ready, strutting around in their Jaeger, horny grim, which they think is hilarious and Lily thinks is stupid, but just laughs about it every time. Remus studies those Jaegers, teaches the children, takes care of Harry. Even Peter is happy, standing around taking care of Carrie and the other children in the Shatter Dome. All of them, they're happy together. Ron was raised in a Shatter Dome. His mother ran one, his father was a government liaison. All of his brothers... Bill left as soon as he was old enough to fly when his parents wouldn't let him. Went to a different Shatter Dome, and him and Fleur teamed up. They get a lot of interviews, a lot of media coverage, because they're both so gorgeous and they fly so well. But even still, their mother's desperately afraid that Bill isn't going to come home one day. Charlie moved to the coast, horrifying both his parents, but so he could study Kaiju Blue closer. In the same way, their mother's still afraid he's not going to come home one day. Ron and George just follow the best Jaeger pilots around. Desperate to know what makes them tick, but not willing to get into a thing themselves. And Ginny, well, as soon as she was big enough to crawl inside a Jaeger, she did, fixing some little tiny thing that no one else could get their hands at. And now whenever you see her, she's covered in grease, fixing another tiny little thing. Hermione was 7 years old when the first kaiju attached, and she stared at the screen. She was fascinated as it destroyed the city and destroyed everything, and all her friends wanted to be Jaeger pilots. Hermione thinks the world is coming to an end and they'll destroy us all, but she doesn't know if she's talking about the kaiju or the Jaegers. Hermione and Luna agree that the world is ending. There's a triple threat coming through the fabric soon, and no one knows who's going to be able to stop it, or if anyone will. They agreed. They never agree. But only two Jaegers were in working condition. There's not enough pilots to go. Not since Dean and Seamus were injured, and their Jaeger destroyed, so who knows what's going to happen. Harry grew up in Shatter Domes. They were the only home he'd ever known. His parents and all their friends were there, everyone who took care of him and everyone he knew. He wanted to help the war effort, help the people who were fighting even though he couldn't fight himself. And Dumbledore said he would be able to, that he knew how. Parents would just laugh and take him away and tell him that all the photographs of him with his mummy and daddy in the Jaegers, him holding a wrench and smiling, and him just having survived were enough. But Harry wasn't sure. Lily made the Mark III Jaeger, Arazed Phoenix. She drifted with James to test it out, and when she came out of it, she knew that she could pilot it. There was enough mechanics, enough engineers, but not enough pilots. Lily didn't want anyone else to risk themselves, so she went to Dumbledore and told him that the only one who'd fly Arazed Phoenix was her and James. Dumbledore tried to convince her, told her that they needed her expertise, they needed her knowledge. And in the end, he tried to tell her just how irresponsible it was for her and James to go off together, risking life and leaving Harry by himself. But Lily wouldn't back down. If anyone was going to fly Arazed Phoenix, she said, it was her and James, and that was it. Ginny killed a kaiju when she was 11. She was just crawling inside a Jaeger that had just come back from the battle, trying to fix some tiny thing that the bigger engineers couldn't get at, when just suddenly she saw a pair of tiny eyes in front of her, and suddenly it was on her. But Lily was a younger sister who'd grown up with brothers, and her first instinct was to lash out, and she hit and hit and hit it with her wrench till it fell off her. The scientists were thrilled. Her parents were terrified. They nearly didn't want to let her back in again, but Ginny just picked her wrench up next time and went straight back inside, as there was no stopping her. Fred and George were obsessed with Jaegers. They thought they wanted to make rockets something, or some kind of mechanics, or spaceships, or whatever, and they're not even sure now anymore what they thought. But as soon as they knew about Jaegers, it was just Jaegers. Jaegers and nothing else. And that was the only thing they'd see, and they just wanted to make them bigger and stronger and better. Luna came out of her workshop raving, saying they needed a nuclear bomb. The alien homeworld was flammable, and if they could just get a nuke in there through the fold, they'd be able to blow it up and cause a chain reaction. No one asked her where she got the information, because mostly nobody really wanted to know, but it didn't really matter, because no one was giving a nuke to the defunct Jaeger program, so they were out of ideas. They couldn't even make one. Fred and George looked at each other. They could get one. They had a nuke. They had a delivery system. They had a plan. They had a secret project all along. A homemade Jaeger. They brought it out of hiding, their secret project, their Jaeger. The twins looked up at it in awe, and the rest of the room looked up at it in what Ginny could only describe as a general expression of what the fuck. The official record of Luna Lovegood entering into the Kaiju program has been lost, if it ever really existed, lost in a Kaiju Blue attack, and there are those that say that this is further evidence of the Kaiju's desperate attempt to control the world. And there are those that point to this as a conspiracy, that the Kaiju were sent here to control us. When James started flying with Lily, Remus went to Cirrus and literally begged him to join up with him. Literally. Got down in front of him on his hands and knees in the middle of the class, and the students were delighted, and Remus was horrified, but the work was too important. They got into Horny Grim and fought alongside Erzad Phoenix, and no Kaiju stood a chance. Harry was 12 years old when his parents died. He spent a year in shock, and after that everything changed. The Jaeger program was doing well. They didn't really need Harry anymore as propaganda to try and encourage more people into it, so he didn't have to give interviews or take photographs. He wasn't a cute kid anymore, and the world was moving on. Harry was relieved a little bit. He wanted to train him and Ron, but Ron was too young, and Dumbledore and Mrs. Weasley put a stop to that. Harry was too young too, and Harry was never going to be allowed to pilot. Too important, too valuable to the mission. No one was ever letting Harry inside a Jaeger. By the time Ron was old enough to learn to pilot a Jaeger, the program was winding down, but he joined up anyway. He'd always thought he'd fight next to Harry, drift with Harry, but with Harry out of the program, forbidden from entering, he just had to find someone new. He thought he'd join up with one of the other boys in the class, but as soon as they started, Dean and Seamus stopped being separate people and became Dean and Seamus. Their connection obvious even outside the cockpit. Ron was compatible with a girl, Lavender. And they joined together and piloted. They weren't the best, but they were good together. They knew what they were doing, and they could make the Jaeger work. But the first time out, they were both terrified. Ron had never seen a Kaiju before, neither had Lavender, and they both suddenly got the realization that if program was winding down with less and less money and less people willing to join, they never would have been allowed out of training in the state they were. They both panicked and something went wrong, but one of them, they don't know which one, managed to get them out of there. The Jaeger was destroyed, but they made it back to shore in time, and Lavender quit the program and never went into a Jaeger again. Ron wanted to get back in, but he was too afraid and didn't have a partner, didn't know if he'd ever have one again that would be willing to get in with him. As soon as she was 14, Hermione stopped pretending to be normal. She tested out of high school, out of most university courses, so she could do what she wanted to do. She focused on physics, interdimensional particle physics, quantum mechanics, anything so she could try and figure out where the Kaiju were coming from and how to get rid of them. Every project was about that. Professor said she was driven, classmates said she was crazy. Everyone said she was obsessed, but Hermione ignored them all. She just wanted to know. General Dumbledore wanted the Weasley twins in a Jaeger. They'd drifted before. They wanted to know every single thing about the Jaegers that they could. Knew they had to know that if they were going to work on them. But they didn't want to. They didn't want to fly one forever. Didn't want to be trapped in the drift until they could come down. Drifting for a few minutes was enough, because sometimes they would wake up, screaming, phantom limbs and phantom injuries, scaring them, terrifying them. Because their dreams were linked now. They'd wake up feeling each other's pain, blinding green lights, hurting them. Phantom limbs and phantom injuries scaring the two of them. They knew exactly how a Jaeger worked, knew how the drift worked, but they refused to get inside one. They never would until they were the last option possible. But they refused to get into one, kept on refusing the whole time until the options were gone and it was time for the end of the world. If anyone asks, Luna will tell them the Kaiju were just misunderstood. Just one of life's mysteries. But then she'd talk about the little folk who lived in her lab and the Fae who helped her get things done, and people wouldn't know if she was being serious or trolling. They'd just slowly back out of the room while she kept talking. By the time Harry was 14, he'd given hundreds of speeches to inspire Shatterdomes, and he refused to endorse the wall even as the Shatterdomes were closing down around him. But Harry was sure the Jaegers were still necessary. His Uncle Remus and Uncle Sirius were sent out more and more because Hornygrim kept ruining things until the one time when Sirius made a stupid mistake in even stupider circumstances and shattered his spine. Remus took him to live in land where they could be safe, theoretically, even if just for a while. Harry stayed in the Shadow Domes because, even without them, that was all he'd ever known, the only life he'd ever had. And maybe, one day, he'd be able to help the way he'd always wanted to. After the Jaeger program was halted, and Jaeger production stopped, the twins started working by moonlight. They'd keep doing their regular jobs during the day, whatever they were asked to do or supposed to be doing at any given time, but at night time they came alive. They salvaged scraps of Jaegers and slowly pieced them together in the back. Ginny caught them early and asked to help, and she knew more about Jaegers, the actual mechanics of them, than either of them, so they let her help, reluctantly. More and more Jaegers were shut down or defeated by the kaiju, and they kept working. They worked as the wall went up, they wilted as it got worked as up got bigger, and as the world was ending, they scrambled to finish their creation. Finally, they got to stand back and look at it. Didn't look like a Jaeger, it looked more like a scrap of metal pounded into the vague shape of one, but it was there, and it was standing, and it was upright, and they knew it would work. "What are you going to call it?" Ginny asked. The twins looked at each other. "Wizard Wheezy." It looked like it would fall over if you sneezed. Sirius was taken out of the game by a stupid, stupid mistake. It wasn't a kaiju attack or a fall from a Jaeger or anything significant. It was just skateboarding across the Shatter Dome, a risk so insignificant it paled in comparison to the ones he took every day, but that was it. His back is broken and he can't go on, can't stand up in a Jaeger anymore, can't drift through the pain. Remus is secretly glad. Sirius was reckless enough when James was around, but with James gone, it seems like he's developed a new level. Remus just wants him to be safe. The breach was opening. Wizard Wheezy was ready, its defenders and creators ready. They had no one to pilot. Blade Dancer was ready with its usual pilots, and no one really asked why two figure skaters had been two of the most successful Jaeger pilots, fighting Kaiju Wolf and keeping their Jaeger together when most people failed. If you asked them, they would just gaze at each other soppily and talk about love, and people would walk away before they had a chance to get too detailed. Dumbledore pearled Remus out of retirement and thought that between them they could pilot one of the last remaining Jaegers, Jidiminaris. But when the klaxons went off and Lee was yelling out orders, the twins found people already in Wizard Wheezy. Harry, there, dressed and ready, clear-eyed, with a girl they'd never seen before. Harry, dressed, clear-eyed and ready to go, with a girl they'd heard about before but never actually met. Chrome was the only Jaeger pilot to ever survive when her co-pilot died inside the drift. She was a little too calm and a little too eerie and claimed he was still living inside her head, but she and Harry were drift compatible and they knew they could do this. They knew this was a one-way mission, that they weren't coming back, but that they had a chance to end this all, to stop the end of the world. Neither of them flinched in the face of certain death. Then someone screamed because General Dumbledore had a heart attack, falling to the ground. It wasn't going to be in Wizard Wheezy, but the twins were finally in the pilot seat. Luna knows the kaiju better than anyone. She knows them better than anyone, and even though she loves creatures and she doesn't like to see harm come to them, she knows the only way to stop them is to destroy them fully, that they'll never stop coming until the end, until they're all gone. So she straps on her drift helmet and goes to work. I can see them. I can see them all cheer as they walk towards the gate. They're taking it out, the God Killer. Erised Phoenix taking it out to the water. They don't understand. They don't look at these creatures and see the beauty of them. See that they're coming, that they're beautiful, that they're going to save us all. They just take them out. They try to destroy them. Think that they know the way. I can see the hangars come. Three helicopters picking Erised Phoenix up and dropping it out into the ocean. My eyes close against it. I can't bear myself. God Killer taking on the god and destroying it. Everyone around me holds their breath. I can feel someone clutching my hand. They're desperate, desperate for this relief. But instead, I can see it. Erised Phoenix raise its hand to strike the God Killer and the god resists. The god strikes back and Erised Phoenix hits the water, dead, unable to move. It's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Around me, silence. Everyone stops, stares, unbelieving that something like this could have happened. That Erised Phoenix could finally have been defeated and the gods can reign anew. I fall to my knees. Next to me, someone mistakes my elation for grief. Are you all right, Peter? They ask. I look up through tears, my tears of joy that they can perceive as tears of sadness, and shake my head slowly. It's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Three Jaegers go to the party. Blade Dancer, Judy Mineros, and Wizard Wheezy. Three Jaegers, three kaiju, the fight to the end, and everyone knows staring out on the water that even if this isn't the end, even if not everyone comes back, and even if they live to fight another day, this is it. This is their last chance to win and their humanity's last chance to save itself. Without this, all is lost. The three Jaegers fight well, but sometimes it seems like they're no match for the kaiju, the unrelenting force that comes against them. There's not enough. There's just not enough movement. The Jaegers don't have enough movement. They can't. They don't have the tails. They don't have claws. They can't get back against it. Blade Dancer distracts, trying to draw them off. Judy Mineros attacks and Wizard Wheezy comes in from behind. It's terrifying. It's scary. No one really knows what's going to happen. Blade Dancer takes out the biggest before getting torn apart. Judy Mineros comes to its first blade and gets knocked to the water. And suddenly, Wizard Wheezy picks up the living kaiju as a shield. And they all go down into the breach. The kaiju, the Jaeger, the bomb. Silence. It stretches for too long, and then escape pods break the water. The first one out is Yuri and Victor, the longest Jaeger pilots, still alive, embracing in the water. The second pod opens and a ginger head emerges, blood pouring down its side, grasping for anything. It's alone, screaming. Yuri and Victor have to look away. A third pod breaks the water and the Weasley twin goes over, grasping, trying to break it open, but a female head emerges instead. She puts a hand on his shoulder to reassure him, but suddenly another miracle, and George turns around and sees his twin. Harry is the last to emerge. When the helicopters are there, the journalists, and they're still there, even just the one. Harry comes, rising from his pod in the ocean like a modern Venus. Harry Potter, the boy who lived, and lived again, and lived again. We have cancelled the apocalypse.
Harry Potter and the Kaiju Apocalypse, written by Pensy Potvik and read by Looney and Gilo too. There are other readers too, and this piece is a very collaborative work made for Pot Together 2017 as a party favor. Some warnings are major character death. There were rumors about a xenobiologist in the lab. Her name was Luna. No one was really sure that was her real name. The rumors said that something had spilled on her, some kind of chemical, and they weren't saying it had made her psychic, but they weren't not saying that either. After the devastating attack in San Francisco, there's only one thing that gives people hope. There was a boy who reached out to the kaiju and he survived. The only evidence of something having happened to him was a scar on his forehead. He was a symbol of hope for everyone. Lily was one of the main people on the Jaegers. Her child was almost destroyed by this, so she became someone who wanted to fight against this. James and his friends joined in on that fight. Their friends fell into the positions that were right for them. They all became caregivers for Harry, and Sirius especially became a huge part of her marriage. Lily wasn't too concerned about it. Everyone was happy, even Peter, even Remus, who was a trainer. For Ron, things were more complicated. His brother Bill had become a superstar along with Floor, and they worked on the Jaegers and did amazing work. Charlie had also moved to research the kaijus. Fred and George were engineers, and Ginny, well, she was found inside a Jaeger once, doing things no others could do. And so she had become a mechanic. Hermione was a child when the first attack happened. Soon, everyone she knew wanted to be a Jaeger pilot. She knew she wanted to work on these creatures, and she wasn't sure which. But Luna, that maybe psychic girl, and Hermione agreed on one thing. It was the end of the world. And even their agreement was a sign of that. There are rumors of a scientist who can merge and drift with the kaiju and become half kaiju herself. Harry grew up with many people pressuring him, wanting him to do this or do that, but all he ever wanted to be was a Jaeger pilot, like his uncle, Sirius, and his father. Lily created one of the Jaegers. She was an engineer, but she once had James test it out, and they drifted together. She knew no one else could have been a pilot for it except for her and James. Many people had tried to dissuade her, especially once she had had Harry, but she knew this was what she needed to do. She knew this was her passion in her life, and the two of them, her and James, it was brilliant. Ginny had had her own experiences, some that she couldn't really understand, couldn't really explain to others. Her method of killing had been brutal. Then there's Fred and George. They love the Jaegers. It's their focus. It's everything that they care about. Apparently, they started from the bottom doing the jobs nobody else wanted to do. Things like screwing bolts and sweeping floors. But then they slowly became engineers. They slowly learned more about the mechanics and the code of things. They had even come up with a secret plan to create a homemade Jaeger. Luna was a special case. She was passionate about this, but she also had new and innovative ideas. She had said that she discovered one of the alien planets was flammable, and then maybe they could create a reaction, a way to save everyone. Hermione had agreed with this crazy idea. There were many rumors about how the kaiju had come to be in the first place. There were people who said there was evidence that kaiju were just an experiment by a secret government agency. This was not the first time these kind of accusations had been made. Similar things have been said about, say, Roswell or the Chupacabra. It was this idea that the government creates things and lets it get out of hand, or creates things to intimidate people. And how can you deny this might be the truth? Sirius did not pilot alone. Well, there is always a possibility that James might have been his true drift partner. He had begged Remus one day to pilot with him. Actual begging is what people report. He was on his knees in front of everyone, begging. The Potters sadly died when Harry was around 11. It was shocking. Harry wasn't the golden child anymore, and so he stayed in a state of limbo, one where he wasn't allowed to pilot, one where he was relatively ignored by the media. Harry and Ron did not enter into working with Jaegers until it was almost over. It was a bad idea. Things were rushed. Things were done badly. And so when he was partnered with Lavender as his fellow drift partner, they never could have known what kind of effect this had. They had no idea. They had no idea what the kaiju actually looked like. And so they nearly died. And Lavender left the program. Hermione, for her part, was brilliant still. She had dropped out of high school and rushed through college. And now, no matter what her projects were, and no matter what programs, she was always focused on the kaiju, where they were coming from, and why. She was obsessed. Luna talked about how the kaiju were just misunderstood creations. We didn't know where they came from, and we didn't know why. We didn't know what they wanted. And so how could they not be one of life's greatest mysteries? They had worked well together. They were good. Until the day that Sirius made a stupid mistake, and he became paralyzed from this. You mistook him somewhere to help him recover. This work was taxing. This work was difficult. And so, even though it meant they could never go back, Mimus was glad Sirius was simply still alive. Things started to change. Dumbledore had to pull Remus from retirement, and Fred and George were allowed to take their own self-made Jaeger out into the field. Harry got to work there. And sadly, it was during this time, when they were all the most needed, that General Dumbledore died of a heart attack. He was doing what no one else had done, neither his brothers nor his sisters. He knew they were right. The gods were returning with strength and power and righteousness. He was excited as this happened, as the gods came out of the water. And he knew they would win, even when there was that moment of doubt. And then he was flooded in despair and fear. But then the God Killer faltered. It was enough for them to lose, for the God to win. He had won. They had won. The gods had won. People noticed. He was standing still and overwhelmed with joy and awe. They asked him, "Are you okay, Peter?" Luna put on the drift helmet and she saw everything light up. She understood the kaiju's hearts and brains and souls and bodies, and she knew them better than they could ever know themselves. And she was going to use this knowledge to destroy them. She couldn't stop until they were destroyed. The end had come. The kaiju fought with the Jaegers in a battle that cost so many deaths. There were bombs, and then there was silence. The longest living Jaeger pilots were Yuri and Victor. Their escape pods were found in the ocean. Somehow they were still not dead. Eventually, another escape pod had broken onto the surface, and it was someone with red hair, covered in blood, looking awful. It was George, and he approached another escape pod that floated up, and he knew it wasn't Fred. He didn't know how to handle this, and so he just screamed from the pain of knowing what he'd lost. But then he heard, "Hey, I think I need help." And he turned around and he did see his twin. The last one to come up was Harry. He did so when the helicopters had already arrived. He looked like a modern Venus, and he let the world know, "We have canceled the apocalypse."
Out of the Drifts by Something Incorporeal. Luna knew she was strange. Or at least, that was what people said.
They say she fell in it. The blue.
No. No way.
She can do things.
And you're mad.
Not as mad as her.
She didn't know if the stories were true. But she knew she was different. Harry was different too. But not like her. It was close though. Closer than anyone else, at least. Every time she saw that picture, the one blown up and plastered over every flat surface in the Shatter Dome, she was reminded of just how different. Because when the others saw that picture of the baby reaching out to the huge kaiju, they saw hope for humanity's victory. Well, all she saw was a different sort of hope. A hope for coexistence. People saw so little and mocked so easily. Not that she minded. They could call her a fool all they wanted. But she knew they could learn more.
There will be a double event, and then shortly thereafter, three. Here is our universe, and here is theirs. And this is what we call the throat, the passage between the breach and us. We know that it's atomic in nature. I predict that the increased traffic will force the breach to stabilize.
Luna gasped as she emerged from the drift, eyes burning and red, and just everything. The world continued to rush past her eyes as someone pulled at her arms and voices shouted and shouted and...
What was she thinking? Look at her, didn't I say it? She was mad? Just stop moving! General Dumbledore, sir, she's not...
As the world continued to swirl and rush, she smiled and let her limbs go slack. This was it. This was it. When she dreamed, she saw him. She didn't know if he was really there. But it hardly seemed to matter. She reached a hand out, floating in starry nothingness. Luna reached out a hand and placed it on his nose. And then she knew. He knew. He told her, and tears stung at her eyes. She awoke, her fingers still tingling, and the dark knowledge firm in her heart that there was no end. Could be no end. No end she could stomach anyway. She looked down at her hands, before clenching them and standing with a hard expression. She had someone to talk to. Hermione had listened and nodded thoughtfully. Luna had been convinced she was going to laugh and shoo her away from her workshop. Not that Luna enjoyed being surrounded by all the machines and people and buzzing tools. The creatures and fey beasts who stayed in her lab tended to avoid the hustle and bustle of the upper workshops. Luna was aware that her presence was earning whispers and glances, but that was nothing compared to the commotion that ensued when she mentioned the word bomb. What ensued next was a blur of red hair, late-night robotics, and the comings and goings of more people than Luna could handle. She knew that there was no other way out. That there would be no cooperation or negotiation. But it still made her eyes sting to think of the end they were working towards. The twins' Jaeger was already standing tall and solid, and the ragtag group of the other Jaegers stood alongside the scrappy Wizard Wheezy. Luna noticed new people. An intense young girl who wore an eye patch and occasionally murmured to herself, like she was expecting an answer. The first time she met her, Luna knew they were somehow alike in their differences. But that final day came too quickly for her to really know why. It was dark, but also bright and intense in the drift. She saw everything. Heard the voices of the kaiju. These monsters, her friends, her enemies. It was the end. She flew through them, around them and in between. The helmet was a small link to what the rest of the world called reality. This was her final drift. And now would come their final fight. And it all stopped. She heard Harry calling out their victory, the boy who had been spared by the monsters. She knew it was the right thing, knew that this was their only way to survive. But that knowledge did not stop the strange feeling that prickled against her skin before she stepped out to join the celebrations. The end.
This is UNF, and I'm here with my little ones, Aurora and Northstar. And for our last history class, we are doing a Kaiju Wars project involving memories and an exposition that Opossung put together, where basically they show us pieces of history records from the Kaiju world, and they try to see, like, we're exposed to them for a very short time, and then they ask us what we remember from them. And obviously this is an exercise in memory, but also in how everyone perceives history differently. And the pieces they show us will not necessarily reflect what actually happened or what we learned happened in the walls, but maybe they will. I know it will span from maybe mid-range walls onto the end, like all over the fall of the Great Wall and onto the victory. But it doesn't really get into the Reconstruction era, which was my parents' time. We are not allowed to take notes. We are not allowed to do anything. We just have to watch these media and remember them. So that's what I did. But I also tried to draw them after recording my things because I think that would be a better memory, and that's how I see it. So in this report, I will try to include some of these sketches as I do them. If you are only listening to the audio version, you might want to go to my essay to see some of these. So let's do this. The first thing they showed us was a picture.
Tiny Ginny, Ginny Wesley, perhaps 7 years old. She's wearing bright orange overalls that are stained with grease, and she falls face to face with the chubbiest, slimiest, cutest little monster in the world, and kind of discovers a new species and makes friends with it. And everyone is equally horrified and amazed by the cuteness. And yeah, she's just playing with a monster in a tight space of gears.
The second picture was made in mixed media.
Think of it as a collaboration between inks and watercolors, but like very bright watercolors. You have Luna, who is covered in kaiju junk, blue, kaiju blue. So she has her yellow hair that just frizzes everywhere, with her big blue eyes that stand out because she had goggles on. So she's covered in, like, her face in front is covered in blue, but her eyes are clear because of the goggles. So she has this smile, you know, that smile, and just pleased and happy, and like she knew all along she was going to do it, but she's still very, very happy it happened. That Luna smile.
It's the one we saw in all the history books, but it was still really interesting to see it live. I'm not sure if I can represent it well, though. The third media was actually a short documentary about Senator Hermione Granger. And it was very inspiring and kind of sad. So I remember it as Hermione at 14, scrawny kid with a big head and just raising her hand in a class. And her notebook is filled with monsters and mecha doodles. And she knows what she's doing. She has ink stains on her hands. And the teacher is exasperated. And the rest of the class are all, you know, like you can see blood shaped in the background. And they're either snickering or face-palming or looking bored and distracted because she's so focused and so into it, and they're not that into it. And this is clearly a class, like a science class, because there's like beakers and like, you know, a periodic table dans le fond de la classe. And so this is tiny teenager Hermione decides that she's going to save the world by understanding it. But then afterward, the picture I have is
Hermione. She's looking at the stars, but she has, like, she's holding all these charts, and some of them have, like, a weapon on them. But she's still looking at the stars in wonder. So we don't really know if she does plan to nuke them or not. It's still unclear.
The fourth part was, again, about the Wesley's dynasty. I've talked about Ginny Wesley. And now we are talking about, we are seeing the twins. This was an animated hologram in 3D with colors, and it was a very strange, very artistic take. Fred and George awake at night. Each, like, they have side bunks. They have bunks. They have beds. Deux lits comme jumeaux, in the same room. And they're each sitting up, and it's clearly the middle of the night. There's only a night lamp, in veilleuse, on the, so il y a une veilleuse à table de chevet qui les illumine, un peu en backlight, tous les deux. Puis ils sont shaken, comme vraiment upset, parce qu'ils viennent se réveiller d'un rêve. Et sur les bords de l'image, un peu en train de creep in, il y a des fragments de leur rêve, que c'est des rêves de douleur, de pain, avec du deep red, puis black and like neon blue tendrils slipping in. Que c'est des leftovers de leurs rêves communs parce qu'ils ont déjà drifté et qu'ils peuvent plus drifter. They can't anymore, don't understand. Like, not for anything, not for peace, and not until it's the very last thing that might save the world. Because they are clearly like PTSD, and this was traumatic for them. But they're still together and alive. I'm saying this because there was a lot of news clip accompanied with these from the Times, because I guess I thought that printed news went out of fashion in 1990, but apparently you still had them in 2000 something. So I don't really know that standings. So they had these printed headlines about whether the Wesley dynasty had died out, or whether the Wesley twins, as they called them, were dead for so long. And it was apparently a big thing that people were very afraid of. So, they're still alive. They're still so alive. The next picture with them takes us into this hangar warehouse. The hangar is cluttered with bits and crap. It's mostly a scrapyard, to be honest, but within walls. And things are falling apart. There are breaches in the wall. There's rust everywhere. And you have, I'm amongst the pile of scrap in the dusty red. You have two figures. Like, you have, there's the light overhead that shines on this. And it's very grungy. But you have tiny figures, three tiny figures with bright yellow and red hair that are working on what, upon closer inspection, turns out to be a Jaeger robot that they're clearly handmade. They've made themselves. This is Ginny at the bottom working inside, well, in the middle, like she's working at the heart of the Jaeger. Think Escaflowne type of heart, like a big jewel heart. And you have Fred and George each working around a hand of the Jaeger as if they are putting on a glove for it. And this is clearly, like, it's the middle of the night. You can see the stars through the cracks in the walls around them. And this is last-ditch effort, but they have to try. They have to do it. The next one that we just saw was... it was about Peter fucking Pettigrew. You know, the traitor. With a huge grin on his rat-like face. And he has his arms raised, you know, in the praise the Lord kind of picture. And this huge, I don't know, this maniac look in his face. And behind him, there are Jaegers exploding and the wall crumbling down, and it's basically a world of rain and fire, and he's just so happy to be there because he orchestrated this mess and just wishes for a kaiju, like, overtake.
Right. So speaking of people surprising us, there's the beginning of the Harry Potter legend. So we start with, you know,
this very famous photograph of Harry standing in the streets, face to face with an alien, and being softly backlit. If I was drawing this, it would be absolutely in pale shades of beige with red streaks reflecting on the kaiju's scaly muzzle, dragon-like. And the boy lived with only a faint scar for his showing, but no one really knows why. But it did become a symbol of hope.
We still learn about this. What we don't really learn about is the relationship between Ron Weasley, the youngest of the Weasley dynasty, and Harry Potter. And, well, there was this whole biography about it, but what I really got from it was this image of
teenagers, Harry and Ron, where Ron, like, they're back to back. Both of them are the same picture and they have the same color theme, but they're back to back. And the spotlight, the light source is falling on Harry, on Harry Potter. Well, Ron is in the shadows, but Harry has his eyes closed and is very sad because his parents died. Poor dear. But Ron is looking forward and determined, and he's a grim look on his face because he's going to be a pilot. But his drift buddy is not on the same life track as his, as himself for now. So they're together, but not. Facing each sides. In the Harry picture, Harry and Ron back to back, Harry is front-lighted by flashlights from the media going on in the dark that look like stars. And they illuminate this Harry Potter who has his eyes closed, while Ron is the shadows.
But you can tell that it is determined to turn over this war. And the last picture about the great Weasley twins, but also of this project, was that really famous one. There's quite a few famous ones, but this one was in a new frame, and had really bright colors. And it was Fred and George embracing on top of a raft in the middle of the ocean. Behind them, like, the ocean is exploding as if a great, huge thing just fell into it, like, crashed into it. Their little place is quiet, but they're hugging it out. But it's clearly not okay yet. And there's probably, like, the red of their hair, and there's red on their suits, and there's red in the water, but you're not sure if it's the sunset behind the wave or if it's more blood. And there's a lot of blue. And that too, is it kaiju blue? Is it water? And I think that was actually a really good way to end this, because it was a really good analogy between the sacrifice of war, but also the cost of war, and also I think the victory and the loss all wrapped up together, and the hope and everything. So that concludes our project. I'm very happy to have been able to do it. I don't think I've remembered half of the things I was supposed to, but no matter. And if you've enjoyed this, I hope you leave me a good grade on wherever you've seen this project. And yeah, thank you for Opalsong, who put together the exposition we saw, and to everybody who participated.